Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 186 of Unblocking Crypto. Al, as always, great to see you.
Hey, good to see you, Jay.
So I'm going to start out with something different. That it's not right. Bitcoin focused. Ethereum hit a new all-time high. That's been the first time in 4 years, so it's kind of exciting. And maybe this means the altcoin season is finally here, but it is a long wait for a lot of people that Ethereum has kind of come back to life.
Yeah, I saw that. And like the alt season usually comes after Bitcoin season, and it's like money rotates out of Bitcoin and into altcoins. So I'm hoping that isn't a bad sign for like, that was it. We have hit the peak for this cycle. I don't believe that's true. Just the way that this went or is going, none of the bull market like hyperbolic price rises and anything that like that's in. But it does help that Ethereum hasn't. It just broke its previous all time high. It's not like it's double triple that, like in a real price run. So, but yeah, Ethereum's like doesn't seem to die.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's going to die. But two, I think it's got a lot of positive momentum and with all the Ethereum treasury companies and pretty much everybody choosing to put or to build on top of Ethereum. So we can talk more about that later, but that was just kind of one of those things that it finally happened. So Ethereum hitting a new all-time high, and shoot, we've been talking about Bitcoin hitting all-time highs every few weeks here, and it's almost gotten boring. They hit a new all-time high. So it's nice to see somebody else finally doing that.
Yeah, no, it's Bitcoin. I mean, if you look at the price chart compared to the last few cycles, it is boring.
Yeah,
it gets even the all-time highs. It hits a new all-time high and it just barely goes over it and doesn't make a real monster run. It just kind of settles in and trades around and consolidates. And I think it's just trying to bore people to death.
Yeah, well, I know that there has been quite a lot of talk about the rates dropping. Powell and the Fed have mentioned that they might be ready to reduce the rates soon. I've seen that the odds for a September rate cut have jumped from about 75% to 87%. And that's via the CME Fed Watch. Polymarket has a little bit less than that, at like 78%, but they also put a 4% chance of having a 50 bips rate cut. So that would be really interesting. If we do see rate cuts, that's usually a good sign for alternative assets, and money usually flows into that.
Yeah, I listened to Jay Powell talk at Jackson Hole, and it sounded to me like he was open to it. Mainly, the thing that stood out to me was it sounded like they're relaxing on the 2% inflation target, which I think everybody that's serious about this had talked about them doing a year ago, because they're getting back to 2% is going to be incredibly difficult as they try to balance the economy versus the stock market, unemployment and inflation. So the easiest thing to do would be to, like, the 2% is really a guideline, not a rule, and loosen that up so that they can play with the interest rates a little bit more. And you know, the unemployment game, you know, the numbers are all trash when they release the unemployment numbers. So they went back and revised those way down. So, you know, the Fed says that they're data driven, and the data that they're driven by is garbage. So they're not data driven, and the data that they would be driven by is trash. So they can kind of do whatever they want. I think that lowering interest rates is a requirement in order to refinance this debt, this short-term debt that's rolling over every 3 months to 1 year, and they don't have a choice. So I think the interest rates will come down, and no matter what, Powell's out in May. Trump is trying to fire one of the Fed governors for potential mortgage fraud that she propagated, I guess. I don't know the details. So trying to get her out so he can put another one of his like-minded Fed governors in and push this thing across. No matter what, come May of next year, Trump's going to get his guy in there or his girl in there, and things are going to soften up. So if they drop interest rates a little bit this year, They're going to drop even more next year. So yeah, it's still good for risk on assets, in my opinion.
Yeah, the market reacted pretty positively during those remarks. I think Bitcoin jumped about $5,000 in a couple of minutes. Ethereum pretty much hit their all-time high. It did that Friday. It helped erase some of the outflows that the ETFs had seen. They had seen about $2 billion in outflows last week, and that came down to about $1.4 billion. So it's still a pretty big outflows globally for all the ETFs, but it is starting to head back in the right direction. And it's been like since February since they've seen that kind of outflow from the ETF. So, I mean, it's about time that it had a little bit of a, maybe a call to correction just from the buying stop for a second for a week. But I'm assuming it'll probably start to pick back up here in the near future.
Yeah, even though the Bitcoin price has crashed all the way down to like a 110,000, I think that anything in this trading range is just noise.
Yeah, I also saw the Fed Vice Chair for Supervision, I think her name is Michelle Bowman, she mentioned that staff should be allowed to hold small amounts of crypto to gain practical understanding, which is holy cow, like hell is freezing over when they start talking about, oh yes, hold crypto and let's see how it works so that you can actually make decisions on the right way to do this stuff moving forward. So I'm kind of intrigued to see if that goes anywhere and what happens there, but that's pretty exciting too.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to argue against that. I mean, you know, if you go in, you understand the traditional financial markets because you've been in them. But the newer ones, if you're not allowed to have exposure to them, then I just don't feel like you're going to have as much of an understanding. So, yeah, I'm okay with that. And like you said, small amounts. I mean, you can't start to try to benefit off of it financially based on, you know, the decisions you make and in your position. But yeah, you need to be able to play with it.
Yeah. Agreeing about the CFTC too. They are now on their third crypto sprint. This crypto sprints were kind of this initiative that were part of a four-phase process that began back in, I think, August 1st. They're running alongside SEC's Project Crypto. This sprint was apparently planning on expanding to custody, leverage retail trading, and consumer protections. The feedback is due back on October 20th. So I think what the consensus is that the U.S. is shifting from enforcement to enablement and really positioning itself to set the global standards in digital asset markets, which is, I think, what we want and would be great if that continues to happen.
Yeah, I mean, regulatory clarity is a big piece to this puzzle too. So that anything they can do to give people a little bit of confidence that they know what they're doing, that'd be great.
Yeah. And I saw that the U.S. House slipped an anti-CDBC bill, or some clause, maybe I should say, into a 1,300-page defense spending bill. So they really want the U.S. to not do any CBDCs. And it seems as if the U.S. remains the only major economy that is halting retail CBDC development. So, I mean, I think that's great news on our end, but we'll see how long that stays and if it doesn't somehow get changed at some point in the future.
Yeah, it's fine with me. It's kind of wild to hear that the politicians are sneaking things into giant bills that I would be supportive of. That's a first.
Yeah, so speaking of the market structure side of things, you got the Senate doing their market structure bill and the House and the Clarity Act. Those are being talked about quite a bit. Tim Scott, who's the head of the Financial Services Committee, has kind of come out and said, Elizabeth Warren is fighting hard against the Clarity Act, or whatever you want to call it, market structure. So no surprise there. He, I think, was expecting a September 30th delivery to Trump, but Cynthia Lummis is now saying that she thinks it's going to happen hopefully before Thanksgiving. They only need about 7 Democrats to vote for it. If you look at the Genius bill, I think 18 Democrats voted for it. So that doesn't seem a lot, but apparently Elizabeth Warren is getting a lot of people on her side, and that's a little scary sometimes too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, banks have a lot of money. They can throw a lot of money around in their lobby in Washington. So it's kind of a tough uphill battle, but like, we'll see. I mean, telling me that Cynthia Lummis is hopeful to get something done by Thanksgiving means I would say February is a good target to see that come through.
Yeah. And then some more U.S. news. I saw the IRS is losing another key person. This time it's the head of digital assets unit. So she's leaving the IRS. She's going to go work at a couple of different things, one of which is for a company called Crypto Tax Girl, which is a tax business that specializes in crypto transactions. So it's interesting she's leaving the IRS to go do that.
Yeah, I saw that randomly too. Maybe because I kind of was clicking through and trying to figure out the Bohine where he landed, which was Tether. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of like what happens with the FDA, like the pharmaceutical executives become FDA board members, and then they go roll back onto boards for pharmaceutical companies, and it kind of happens on the financial side too. So if we could intermingle some more people in the crypto and Bitcoin space into politics, I'm sure they're having conversations that are pro Bitcoin when they're in Washington. And so I feel like this is just how the game is played, and crypto is starting to play the game.
Yeah. And speaking of Bohines, I mean, we kind of talked about it last time, and I don't know if you had seen that was happening or you just called him going to Tether beforehand, but I mean, yeah. Officially at Tether, he wants to help Tether with their U.S. market entry of their stablecoin, which I think is pretty awesome for him. So I'm really intrigued to see where that goes.
Yeah, that one, it just made the most sense to me. I don't think I saw it, but it was like, man, that's, if you're trying to convert 6 months of your Washington experience into anything you can do with Tether that makes like over $500 million in profit per employee, whatever you can do with them, you should do with them.
Yeah.
They could pay him whatever they need to pay him, and they'll never feel it. So yeah, but a smart move for Bohines. Honestly, man, stablecoins, I feel like Tether has been through the ringer, and if they can have a U.S. compliant stablecoin, that would be a good thing for the stablecoin industry. The new stable coins, they're going to make mistakes. They're going to depeg and they're going to fall apart. Like, not all of them, some of them, definitely, yeah. Right? They're going to mess up. And so I think if Tether, you know, they have a chance to get in the U.S. and become like the gold standard stable coin. And if Bohines can be a part of that because of his connections in Washington, then hey, go for it.
So speaking of stable coins, Coinbase just lists World Liberty's stable coin, the USD1. Which is, World Liberty is also kind of tied to Trump and his family. So it's interesting that is now on Coinbase. Coinbase, I think, has 7 maybe stable coins that they're listing now. And Tether and USDC, of course, have been the two big ones, but you're starting to see a lot of other options out there now too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be a flood of them. Like, once that legislation passed, people see what Tether's doing and how much money they're making. That market's going to get totally saturated, and then they're going to consolidate.
So also from a stablecoin side of things, Wyoming, their stablecoin FRNT has just debuted on 7 different blockchains. And I mean, that's really Ethereum, Solana, and Avalanche, and then 4 Ethereum scaling networks. So Polygon, Arbitrum, Optimism, and Base. They're just kind of interesting. It's going to be backed by cash and U.S. treasuries, but instead of really benefiting a business, all the interest that's generated from that will be diverted to Wyoming School Foundation Fund on a quarterly basis, which will serve its citizens as a public good. So their token is unique because it's not regulated under the Genius Act. And the reason that's the case is Wyoming is a sovereignty, not a business. So I'm kind of intrigued to see what they do. They talked about that FRNT could eventually share a portion of the revenue that it reserves generate with the holders, but that feature isn't going to be enabled. I guess, I think it was yesterday when it got kind of kicked off. So yeah, kind of interesting to see what's going to happen there, Tim.
Yeah. I mean, Wyoming's always been known to be kind of out on the forefront of things like women's suffrage and all that. So for them to have no problem being on the razor's edge of blockchain technology and stable coins, creating their own state-based stable coin and using the revenue and profits to benefit the state. I mean, try it, right? We got 49 more states that could try other things and see whatever is the best. you know, everybody else can start to mimic that. But the only way to find out is to start doing stuff.
Yeah. So Illinois was also in the news. They passed two crypto bills. Those were mainly to safeguard the consumer. So I don't think they've done anything with a strategic reserve or anything like that. But the two crypto bills, the first one was the Digital Assets and Consumer Protection Act, which is giving the regulators authority over crypto exchanges and mandating fraud safeguards. The second one is the Digital Asset Kiosk Act, which is requiring ATM operators to register, capping the fees at 18%, limiting transactions and refunding scam victims. So I think they have like 2 years to comply with this. So typical government, it's going to be a while till we really see anything happen, but it's interesting they're at least talking about it at this point.
Yeah, no, it's good to get this stuff kind of going. And we talked a lot about state legislatures getting stuff done early in the year when it was like a race for the first state Bitcoin strategic reserve. And then all of that just dried up and we hadn't talked about it. And maybe that's because it was summer and like government doesn't really do anything in the summer. So maybe this is kind of warming things back up now that school's back in and everybody's taking their job seriously again. But yeah, I mean, the more conversations that are had at the state legislature level, the more people are talking about it. And if they're talking about it now, then next year they'll talk about it more and they'll get a better understanding. So at least everybody's getting off of zero.
Well, it's interesting you talk about it with the summer not being anything. We've talked about New York. Phil Steck was the legislator that wanted to propose this 0.2% tax on crypto everywhere in New York, right? What he's come out and said is that will not exclude stablecoins. So even if you move your stablecoins from one wallet to another, that's a 0.2% transaction cost, which is kind of crazy. And I think he's trying to go after like the high frequency traders and all that kind of stuff. But the wild part about all this is, okay, that's great. He's proposing it. The New York legislature won't be back in session until January. No, it's August.
They weren't going to get anything done anyway.
That's wild. A lot of talk, not a lot of work. 21 Shares was also in the news. They just announced three new crypto ETFs, and they're adding active management to kind of adapt in real time to the rapidly evolving market. One of those would offer a broad crypto exposure via the tokens themselves, the ETFs, the derivatives, and the equities. The other two would offer leverage exposure to Dogecoin and Sui via derivatives. So interesting that you're going to have, I guess, one being actively managed, and then two, they're going after more altcoins.
Yeah, I mean, they're packaging a lot of stuff together. And, you know, I was thinking about this with like the YieldMax funds that use options to generate a lot of dividends every week or month. Man, they could just use that to beef up dividends. So like this 21 shares, that's like a bucket of all these different things. And if you throw a whole bunch of Bitcoin in there and then some other crypto like altcoins down the line, and then do some MicroStrategy options trading, like to make a little dividend to sweeten the pot. So maybe you get 2-3% back, or not like 0.2-0.3% back per month, so that you're talking about a couple percent every year, in addition to the growth potential in the crypto space. I feel like there's a market for something like that. Like YieldMax is all the way weekly covered call sales. I mean, it's, you don't have to do it that way in order to generate revenue and cap the upside. You could blend a lot of stuff. So I think the ETFs are still just playing with stuff, like just trying to find what the market may want. And, you know, they're not even close to being done. So, you know, all these guys that are cranking out ETFs, they're going to keep doing it.
Sounds like when we start our hedge fund, we already got a plan to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good point.
A quick break from the podcast to talk about a little PDF I put together for everybody. I've been in crypto since about 2018 and made a lot of mistakes. And the one thing I always get asked is, what would you do differently if you got in today? So what I've done is created a PDF that talks about the 10 mistakes that I've made and how not to make those mistakes ever again. If you're interested, you can check the link in the show notes or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/10 and get access to that PDF. That's the number 10, not spelled out. Back to the podcast. Canary was also in the news too. They just filed for an American-made crypto ETF. Apparently, it could include XRP, Solana, and Cardano. The way that they're looking at this is whether those tokens were either originally created in the U.S. or mainly minted in the U.S., they would be part of this American-made crypto ETF. So I'll be intrigued to see where this goes and if there's really a lot of interest in it or not.
Okay. Yeah, that's news to me.
Grayscale just filed an S-1 to convert their Avalanche Trust to a publicly traded spot Avalanche ETF too. So I know we've kind of been talking about Avalanche getting a spot ETF for a little while, but we'll see if it really happens with Grayscale or not.
Yeah. I mean, Grayscale seems like they won't die either.
No. I'm getting too much money from their high cost spot Bitcoin ETF right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Treasury companies, let's talk about those. So, of course, the GOAT Strategy, they bought another 3,081 Bitcoin. They officially now hold over 3% of the Bitcoin supply, which makes like 632,457 Bitcoin. So, pretty exciting. And it sounds like there could be some more news or buys in the near future based on some of Saylor's tweets too.
Yeah, so we talked about a little bit after the earnings call that they provided guidance on when they would use the ATM and sell common stock in order to generate funds to buy Bitcoin. And anything other underneath an MNAV of 2.5, they weren't going to sell common shares and buy Bitcoin. And that lasted like 2 weeks before he was like, we're going to use this opportunistically under 2.5. I think what they did is they kind of cornered themselves. And so the options market kind of was knew what they were going to do. And that was, there's just too much pressure there. And so I think they had to peel that back. And then on this purchase of 3,081 Bitcoin, 310 million of the 357 million came from the sale of common shares. Even though the MNAV is under 2, it's like 1.6 or something. So yeah, I mean, you know, they're basically just playing a stock and options game, a financial manipulation, financial structure game. And so they can't be predictable or the market's going to take advantage of them. So that's gone. And so that honestly, I think a lot of the interest is when they're buying. So they need to be buying.
Yeah. Well, Metaplanet was also in the news. They bought another 103 Bitcoin. They now hold just under 19,000 Bitcoin. But what's interesting is they're now part of the FTSE Japan Index, which is kind of Japan's market-weighted index. So it should give Metaplanet a lot more access to some funds here moving forward too.
Yeah. No, Metaplanet's, they're doing the best job of copying MicroStrategy straight up. I'm curious to see what Jack Mallers does with 21. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a different angle to play. And so, I think that as soon as they get through their merger process to get their stock going, I'm curious to see kind of how they do things.
Bitmine was also in the news. They bought another 190,000 Ethereum, which was about $873 million worth. They're now holding about 1.71 Ethereum worth right around $8.8 billion. So they are still the second largest treasury company. They just have it in Ethereum, not anything else.
Yeah, I am kind of curious to see how that goes. I mean, Tom Lee's always like the most bullish bull and you kind of need that. But they've got kind of the formula. They've got a social media influencer type on board as the face of the company, and they got a board that is cool to get leverage out the wazoo. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, SharpLink tried to follow suit. They bought about $143,000 or 143,000 Ethereum worth about $601 million. It is their largest buy yet. And they now hold, I think, just over 740,000 Ethereum, which is still less than half of what Bitmine has, but another huge buy, and kind of goes back to why we were talking about Ethereum having kind of a moment right now, and there's a ton of buying pressure from a lot of these Ethereum treasury companies.
Yeah, just, I don't know. Ethereum is a weird one. We'll see how it goes.
So there's some other treasury companies that I was noticing that are kind of doing some interesting things. A company called B Strategy, they just announced they're launching a $1 billion U.S. listed DNB treasury company, which is interesting that it's U.S. listed in BNB, since BNB has historically been more Chinese based. They are saying they want to be the Berkshire Hathaway of the BNB ecosystem, which is interesting. But if you, they're not the first person to try this. Wintree Therapeutics had adapted BNB as a corporate treasury asset, and they were recently delisted from the NASDAQ due to failing to meet the minimum listing requirements. So I think you're supposed to stay over a dollar for your stock price, and they're down at like 11 cents right now. So we'll see if this is a worthwhile gamble for B Strategy, but yeah, interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because like these treasuries, it's just like people, man. I mean, where was this in 2022 when everything was rock bottom prices? Everybody knew everything was cheap. You know, people that had been in it for a while were buying. But man, if these companies decided to do this in 2022, everything's like 5x from there.
Yeah,
they would be killing it. But instead, they kind of pile on here at, you know, at the top, because it is the top compared to where we are right now. Who knows where it goes from here? But man, it's funny that companies act a lot like people, where they don't think about buying until it gets expensive.
Yeah, and so there's another interesting thing going on. There's a company or a group called AMTD. They have three New York Stock Exchange listed companies that they are proposing this crypto for stocks conversion program. So it would let people that have Bitcoin, Ethereum, USDT, BNB, USDC, they could send the crypto and get stocks, newly minted stocks for any one of those three companies. So I'm kind of intrigued to see how this works. It's kind of interesting that instead of them going out and buying crypto, they're trading their stocks for it and then theoretically keeping it as a reserve. I think a lot of those companies have to do with experiences. So they're saying that they're going to help facilitate and better the experiences, packaging asset allocation support, leisure and VIP experiences, as well as financial educations. These guys, these three companies, they're all kind of micro to small cap, right? They're AMTD is about 176 million. HKD has about 509 million, and TGE is about 161 million in market size. So kind of small. I'll be intrigued to see if anybody wants to do this, but a cool concept at least.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be really cool if you could somehow not pay capital gains taxes on your crypto and can, you know, get into stock, but it's still going to be a taxable event. So I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah. And then the last, I'll call it crypto treasury company that was doing something different. That's kind of interesting. Viva Power, they decided they wanted to be an XRP treasury company. But what's crazy is Ripple. So XRP is a token. Ripple is a company. Ripple owns a bunch of XRP, but Ripple's shares aren't really super liquid. So they traded a discount to XRP, to the XRP that they hold. So what they are in the process of doing is acquiring about $100 million of Ripple shares. And I think they're doing that at about a $19 billion valuation, which they are saying would get them exposure to XRP at about an 86% discount to the current market price. So buying all these Ripple shares, getting the underlying exposure to XRP, and saving a boatload of money. And that's how they think it's going to be beneficial for them. So I'm intrigued to see how this works and where this is going to go, but it is definitely thinking outside the box. And I think what they're saying is they could get XRP shares for about 47 cents a share right now. And it's what, somewhere in the close $3 range, I think.
That's not a bad, I mean, I don't understand why XRP will go to whatever XRP people tell me it's going to go to. But if you could get it at an 86% discount, and that's worth the lottery ticket just to see if Ripple can really make this thing take off. So, you know, if Ripple does, they're a company. If they go public and your shares become liquid, and I mean, you close that 86% gap, then even if XRP goes down 10 or 15%, You're sitting really, really pretty.
You're still doing a nice little multiplier, that's for sure. Well, let's talk about some of the countries around the world. One of the most interesting stories that I heard last week was the Philippines. So they've introduced a proposal to establish a strategic Bitcoin reserve, and it would direct their central bank to accumulate 10,000 Bitcoin over 5 years and have a two-decade lockup. And I think it's about 2,000 Bitcoin every year for 5 years. And what everybody's saying is that this probably won't be passed at all, unfortunately, but they're expecting a lot of companies in the Philippines to start to recognize maybe the power of Bitcoin. And you might see companies in the Philippines start to accumulate Bitcoin on their balance sheets too. So it could find, unfortunately, I think the chances of this being a real strategic Bitcoin reserve is very low, unfortunately.
Yeah, but still, even just talking about a two-decade lockup means you kind of get it.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about the retirement accounts, you know, Trump opening up the 401ks to Bitcoin exposure and how good of a vehicle that is because of the long-term outlook on things. I mean, at least they understand it enough to be like, hey, let's just buy some and sit on it for 20 years. Like, that's what you should think. Like, that's a good way to approach it.
Yeah, it just seems that most governments don't think more than 2 to maybe 4 years out because they're always worried about the next election, not what's going to happen long term for the country, unfortunately.
Yeah, and to multiply that, they're worrying about problems that are last year's problems. So they're usually a little bit behind and not thinking forward very much. It's kind of a really crappy combination.
So speaking of a country that seems to be in that boat, the UK, there's an organization called the Bitcoin Policy UK that just created an app that lets you send a letter to your member of parliament in really just a couple of clicks. So they've identified four issues. You pick the one that's most important to you, whether it's CBDC opposition, the classification of Bitcoin by the FCA, the Bitcoin tax treatment, or the strategic Bitcoin reserve. And after a couple of clicks, it'll either print out the letter or it'll send it directly with all your information. So I think that's good for the UK because they've been in the news quite a bit, and I feel like the government is trying to hide that there's issues with Bitcoin and crypto and the overall economy, and this is making it easy for all of their legislators to understand more of what's actually happening and what could happen.
Yeah, they need to do something. They seem to be super out of touch with their citizens. Like every time I'm turn around, I'm getting more information about the UK than how things just, they're out of whack. So yeah, anything to get a little bit of signal of what the people actually care about is probably good for that country.
Japan's had a couple little interesting tidbits happen. First off, their finance minister said crypto could be a part of diversified investments, which is wild for somebody high up in Japan to say that. He did kind of say within a proper framework, and what they're doing is they're focused on creating an appropriate trading environment for crypto. Japan historically has had kind of this issue where they're taxing crypto at 55%. So their first goal is moving that to a flat tax of 20%, which would be a huge help for anybody in Japan dealing with crypto. But that's pretty exciting. And then on top of that, Ripple and SBI are planning to launch the RLUSD in Japan by early next year. So since Japan kind of had freshly crafted their stablecoin laws, they opened it up to the market to foreign issuers. And now it seems like Ripple is going to kind of jump at that and try to put Bitcoin in Japan now too.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it works. You got to grow this stuff. And once it works, deploy it globally. And I mean, Jack Mallers Strike Company kind of did that. Like they got it working in one location and then they just copy and paste it into different jurisdictions and different currencies. And it's one of the cool things about this kind of global digital product, like the scalability is through the roof. All you got to do is get approval to launch it in different areas. So similar situation.
Yeah. And while Japan's kind of been on the forefront of stablecoins, we've talked about South Korea a lot and how we would have expected them to be on the forefront, but they seem to be very much a laggard. There is groups from Tether and Circle that are going to be meeting with the top figures and some of South Korea's biggest financial groups. And apparently these discussions will revolve around the potential distribution and use of dollar peg stablecoins in South Korea. And on top of that, of course, the issuance of won-backed stablecoins. So that will be interesting to see. I mean, if you look at South Korea's ruling party and the opposition party, they have very different opinions on how to regulate stable coins. So I think depending on who stays in power versus who gets into power, that will change quite a bit too. But it is good for South Korea to start to kind of get more back into the crypto game, since they are one of the highest trading countries out there in terms of crypto.
Yeah, and the more other countries are getting into stablecoin legislation and allowing it and moving forward, you know, the more the people are going to want it. You're going to, you know, have people doing business in other countries, and they can just skip transaction costs on exchange rates and crap like that. And so I think we're just kind of in this transition period where stablecoins are getting adopted. For the most part, they're dollar backed or dollar based and backed by treasuries or cash or whatever. So I think over time, this will all consolidate into dollar denominated stablecoins, and we'll see other countries jump in because, you know, what is it? Money is a kind of a network event. So it sucks to have three different monies. Like, eventually you have two, and then eventually you have one. So I think the U.S., it would be in the U.S.'s best interest to push forward on dollar-denominated stablecoins and then try to guide other countries to adopt them.
So Singapore was also in the news. Their largest bank, DBS, is issuing a crypto-linked structured note. They're doing that on Ethereum, which is interesting because it's a public blockchain, although the tokens are going to remain permissioned. What's interesting about this is their crypto-linked structured notes will be in $1,000 denominated tokens. Typically, most structured notes are done in $100,000 groups or whatever. So this is going to be much smaller and easier to get. It will be done on three digital investment platforms for now. What's going to happen to start is the bank is not depositing any of these tokens into decentralized liquidity pools, which is kind of the opposite of what everybody hopes DeFi will be. So they probably won't really circulate unrestricted. But because they're putting it on Ethereum, it gives the bank flexibility to explore future on-chain use cases with those tokenized structured notes. So that could include some of the atomic settlement of token issuances of stablecoins and wrapping tokens for redistribution across other blockchains and all that stuff. So it's kind of interesting to see. If you look at the first half of this year, its clients traded more than $1 billion of crypto options and structured notes. The volumes are up 60% quarter on quarter. So it is growing, although for most people, it's only accessible via accredited and institutional investors. So got a little ways to go, but this could start to grow and become more of commonplace, which would be nice.
Yeah. Like, again, TradFi is just starting to get to play with this stuff and put it in, see if it fits into other packages and, you know, whatever the previous rails are. And that's the fastest way to do stuff. Is like Bitcoin's biggest problem and crypto in general is that it's so different than everything else that people just can't quickly figure it out. So if you can kind of package things and so that it looks and feels kind of like what people are used to, even if those people are institutions and it's kind of at a large scale, I think it's a lot easier to push that along. Like Gary and Grant Cardone, they are packaging Bitcoin in these big like apartment complex, condo complexes. And, you know, they'll put $100 million of Bitcoin in a $800 million project. And the investors don't care. Like some of them are like zero Bitcoin exposure outside of this. But the deal cash flows and it's not a bad deal without the Bitcoin. And so they, you know, it looks and feels like a real estate deal for people that are into real estate deals. And so it's easy for them to jump in it. And now, poof, if Bitcoin doubles and triples, that project becomes the most successful real estate project that they've ever done. And now they're curious about Bitcoin. So, you know, all of these different packages that people are putting Bitcoin and crypto into, I think are good for adoption and kind of breaking the wall between people that are outside of crypto and people that kind of understand it.
Yeah, no, I think those are going to be really intriguing over the next couple of years to see what happens there. So I did see some stuff about France, and I'm not going to talk about a wrench attack because I feel like every time we brought up France, we've talked about a new wrench attack. But the CEO of Telegram, got arrested back in August of 2024. He's kind of come out and said that that arrest was legally and logically absurd, claiming the French police detained him over crimes by users he'd never even heard of. What's crazy is, I mean, it's been about a year. He still must report to French authorities every 14 days, despite an ongoing investigation finding no wrongdoing by him or his platform. And he remains under judicial supervision in France with and doing this 14-day thing, and he has no appeal date yet set. Like, it's every 14 days he must come back and see them, and there's no word on when that's going to end. He came out, and I think he put on Twitter that so far the only outcome of my arrest has been massive damage to France's image as a free country. So, which I can't argue with.
These countries just don't get it. Like, people are watching. Yeah. You know, people who have money and that want to start businesses in like a new up and coming industry are watching, and they're not coming to France. Maybe they weren't anyway, but they're definitely not.
And then the last thing from an international perspective that I did see, Gemini just secured their MiCA license from Malta. So now they're going to be able to do business in the EU, and that'll give them access to what, 30 something countries over there. So I guess good for Gemini. And I think their plan is to IPO here shortly. So a lot of good stuff happening on their end.
I mean, Gemini, they've been around a long time, and they seem to kind of operate in a way that is fairly conservative and safe, and they grow. And I mean, they don't seem like a bad player in this. You know, as we kind of are in this bull market and new things pop up, the older stuff is this. It's really the stuff I look at, because they already know what's going to go wrong or what has already gone wrong. And they're, you know, way less likely to make the same mistakes twice. And the new guys, you know, they kind of see some money that they think is low hanging fruit, but they might get smashed. So yeah, that Gemini, they've been around. What is that? Like 2012 or something. So yeah, they've seen it all.
Yeah, I mean, they've had their Bitcoin credit card for 5 or 6 years now, and I've been using that for a few months, and I've become kind of a big fan. So they have a good product. I know everybody's still waiting for Coinbase to come out with their version of it, but I mean, you can get 3% back. Over the summer, they were giving 10% back on golf. So that was kind of nice for up until the cap that you would get. But yeah, they got a good little product, and it's done well.
Yep.
SoFi was in the news here recently too. SoFi just announced that they're going to allow remittance payments on top of the Bitcoin Layer 2 network. They'll use Lightspark for that. They're expecting that to roll out later this year, which will allow users to send US dollars through their SoFi app with recipients receiving local currency deposits abroad. So this is following SoFi's reentry into crypto. Back in 23, they halted services during their transition to a national bank. So that's exciting to see. I'm intrigued to see if that continues to help them grow too.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like kind of a competitor to Strike's Lightning Network and how they're kind of trying to get remittance payments and transaction fees down, but they're like a bank with a little bit of a better reputation and longer standing. So maybe that'll work. But straight up, man, as long as they're removing some of these monster transaction fees, like Western Union style stuff, I think it's good for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, competition is great, right? So yep. There's nothing wrong with that. And competition only makes all the products better. And the weak ones get weeded out and the strong ones survive. So good for them.
Yep.
So we didn't really talk about Bitcoin a ton, but their difficulty just hit a new all-time high here recently. They had about a 6.4 increase in the past 90 days. What's crazy is the transaction fees for Bitcoin fell below 1% of the block rewards for the first time. And then the other thing that's happening with all this mining stuff is there are some new tariffs on mining equipment imports that really aren't helping the whole process, because I think the tariffs go up to like 57.6%. So there's still that big push to get Bitcoin mining equipment to be built in the US, which I don't think that happens overnight. And until that happens, the mining guys are going to be spending a ton on importing equipment for a while.
Yeah, I mean, tariffs go up and the difficulty rate goes up. So that's kind of an interesting thing. Yep. Because, and yeah, transaction fees are down, but hash rate's up. So, you know, there's a game that's being played as far as mining companies and tax deductible and going public and raising funds and, you know, playing financial games, but mining Bitcoin. But in general, the more difficult, the better for the network. So good deal.
I think we talked last week a little bit about MetaMask, but they have announced the launch of their native stablecoin, MUSD. It's going to be issued by a Stripe subsidy called Bridge and fully backed by dollar equivalent assets. This, their stablecoin, of course, is going to be integrated throughout the whole MetaMask ecosystem. It'll launch on Ethereum and Linea first, and it will be later enabled as a payment option for the MetaMask debit card. I think what the leadership of MetaMask is trying to do is have MUSD become a core liquidity layer, not just for MetaMask, but for all of DeFi. And they're hoping it, because of the wallet's baked-in advantages with crypto users and has this long history of people using it, then that will be helpful. They don't plan to offer yield directly to users, although they do say that holding MUSD could play a role in the future with some of the incentive programs within MetaMask. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, kind of an interesting story that's going to be playing out here very soon.
Yeah. Everybody's got to make moves, and MetaMask has been around. They've got an advantage on that side. So see what they do.
So I know we've talked a lot about hacks and Lazarus Group and stuff like that in the past. So TRM Labs, which is a blockchain forensic firm, has just launched a new real-time intelligence system called Beacon Network. And the whole thing is designed to detect fraudulent crypto before it can be converted into cash. So they said, I think it was since 2023, 47 has been sent to fraud-related addresses. They are tracking that. They've, I think, 2025 has already seen more than $2 billion taken from crypto services, with Bybit, one of the single Bybit incidents, accounting for about $1.5 billion. So this network right now covers about 90 blockchains, both L1s and L2s, but their coverage is expanding constantly. And they're almost calling this Beacon chain as a kill chain. So it'll target key areas, including the North Korean hack funds and some of the ransomware payments and the terrorism finances and all that pig butchering stuff that we've been talking about. So hopefully that will reduce some of those flows. And they have vetted law enforcement agencies across the world participating in this network. So the US, Canada, UK, Ireland, Germany, Netherlands, Switzerland, Spain, Portugal, Australia, South Korea, and a bunch of other countries. So I think that's great. I'm excited to see how well this works and if they can catch it so that this stuff kind of gets locked up and they figure out a way to not have it go right into North Korea's hands every time.
Yeah. And also, you know, there's an element of security theater that would just prevent people from even trying, or they'll kick it to a different way instead of kind of giving a further black eye on this to Bitcoin and giving politicians something to grab onto.
Yeah. And then the last thing that I had, man, it's kind of fun, but kind of stupid at the same time. So there is an app called Doop, D-O-O-P. It is a pay-to-earn app based on you taking pictures of your poop. It will then use an AI agent to analyze the photos, provide custom tips and challenges based on your results. Further down the line, they want to take that data set and sell it to organizations and companies and attempt to do further research. So there is a poop token out there that has about a $6 million market cap, and that's how you would earn incentives by literally taking a picture of your poop every day. So for those people that are looking for a way to get money, here's your new way.
Whatever, man. That one's crazy. But like, if Fartcoin can go nuts and become like a common conversation piece in crypto circles, why not this? That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, what else did I miss?
We didn't talk about 26,000 Bitcoin being dumped on a Sunday and tanking the price, and it looked like kind of a whale manipulative move kind of thing. I don't think it really matters in the grand scheme of everything. I was actually walking 9 holes yesterday, and my Bitcoin buddy rolled up and we played a hole together before he took off. And he was, you know, we were both talking about Bitcoin price, and I'm like, why are we even looking at the Bitcoin price? Like, we're not going to do anything with it. But, you know, it's stuff like this that keeps it interesting. I mean, you know, why would some whale sell 26,000 Bitcoin on the spot? You know, there's a bunch of ways to do that without dropping the price. My understanding is he also played like a sell Bitcoin, buy Ethereum move. So anyway, it seemed like just kind of a, it seemed like a trade that they made, but you know, it's going to take a little while to recover from that little price impact.
Yeah. What's crazy is what I was reading is that he had a crap ton more. So like, if you have this much Bitcoin, theoretically you would make a smart decision and not try to ruin the rest of your stack and devalue it. So I don't know. Maybe there's something more to the story, but like, this just seemed like he was an idiot doing this. So
it seems weird. It seems if you've been in Bitcoin long enough that you have 1,000 Bitcoin, that you're like, I'm good. I don't need to try to work the system to inflate my bags anymore. I'm a winner. I'm in good shape. So I felt like that was weird no matter what, but it's something worth talking about. The other thing I mentioned last week is that I saw an ad for a Bitcoin mobile game, and I'm like, you know what? I'll just download it and see what it's like. Not a bad game. It's like Idle Miner. And so you kind of have these miners, and then as you kind of level up, it gives you sats. I can't even imagine how long it would take to get to accumulate enough Bitcoin to be worthwhile. I mean, it's super small, and it's all based on time. There's no way to really accelerate your Bitcoin capture. So it's neat, but you also have to like withdraw it through their channels into like their stuff. You can't just withdraw it straight into a wallet. So I don't know, but it's interesting that it's, you know, I can download an app that is using Bitcoin as an in-game reward. So yeah, pretty neat.
So out of curiosity, what is the sats per hour of playing? What would your guesstimate be on something like that?
I would say maybe 150 sats per hour, something like that. 100 sats an hour, something like that.
It's going to be 10, 15, 20 cents, something like that.
Right. So I guess there's ads. So maybe they're making a quarter an ad or something. And if they're assuming you're going to watch a couple ads an hour, there's got to be some advertising revenue offset and things like that. So, and they can just drop 20% of their ad revenue to buy more Bitcoin. Which, I mean, if you're the game, it seems like a pretty good gig. You can also kind of meter how fast those those sats are going out the door if things get a little weird and sideways. So, but you can't really do anything with them. Like, you can't capture other users' Bitcoin, or you know what I mean. So it's, you can't really leverage up. It's all time based.
Interesting.
So anyway, but I thought it was neat. I'm gonna take it off my phone because there's no reason for it, but. It's neat that it exists.
Anything else?
I think that's all I've got on my notes.
Awesome. Well, an interesting week for sure. And as always, look forward to see what the next week brings us.
Yeah, no, that's this week. I made a point to go outside and like work on the house and do things and not stay on Twitter as much. So it was kind of an interesting week for me.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, Hal, thanks, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below, and hope to see you there.